Happy Easter. Good morning. It is great to be with you. My name is Jeff Arnold, and I'm pastor of congregational care here at MPC. I'm so glad that you can be joining us on Easter Sunday. It is a great day. Earlier this morning, we gathered down the street in Mandarin Cemetery, and there were about 280 people that were there this morning at 6:30. So some people got up really early this morning. Unfortunately, I woke up 10 minutes before my alarm was to go off at 4:35 this morning and just sat there. But anybody up earlier than that? Oh, good. Wow, somebody was up early. Phil, come on, you got to get some more sleep. Well, this morning, the good news of Easter. What happened? What did I miss? At some time in your life, you have either said this or someone has said this to you. What happened? What did I miss? You get home from work and you walk into the kitchen. What happened? What did I miss? You're at the movies and someone goes to get popcorn and a drink. Why you would go to get popcorn and then drink in the middle of a movie, I don't understand, but it happens. And they get back and they're like, what happened? What did I miss? You're at a game, and it's exciting, and you glance down at your phone for just a second because you got a message, and all of a sudden the crowd roars, and you look up, and you say to your buddy, what happened? What did I miss? Or you walk up to a group of people, and you're just approaching, and they're roaring with laughter, and you think, what happened? What did I miss? I'm sure you can think of a time in your life where something like that has happened for you, where you know that you missed out on something. Well, in our passage today, we're going to encounter someone who missed out on the whole story. They think that they know what happened, so they don't even ask the question, what happened? What did I miss? So let's turn to Mark chapter 16, verses 1 through 15. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. Don't be alarmed, he said. You were looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Thankfully, the story does not end there. But when Jesus rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him and who were mourning and weeping. And when they heard that Jesus was alive and that she had seen him, they did not believe it. Afterwards, Jesus appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking in the country. These returned and reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Later, Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating. He rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. And he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." So Jesus was crucified on Friday, and his body had been taken down from the cross. And Joseph of Arimathea went to Pontius Pilate and asked for Jesus' body. And he put Jesus' body into a tomb, anointed Jesus' body, and placed him into the tomb. And the next day was the Sabbath, so that was a day of rest. And so people were not working, including if someone had died, that was a day of rest. And so the women find themselves wanting to do something because for the last 2 days, they have been mourning. They witnessed Jesus' crucifixion, Jesus' death on a cross. And so what do the women do? They bought spices and they head to the tomb. They're thinking of something practical that they can do. Oftentimes I think that's what we do in times of loss. We think of practical things that we can do. Maybe we can take somebody a meal because they've experienced a loss. Maybe we can send them a sympathy card because they've experienced a loss. Maybe we just want to go over to their house and give them a hug because there are no words that we can share that can convey the love and care that we have for them. But they're thinking practically. They're thinking about what it is that they can do. So they're almost to the tomb and they continue these practical thoughts in their minds and they say to one another, there's a stone in front of the tomb. Who's going to roll the stone away? Maybe they're asking if they're going to collectively work together to do that. Maybe there will be a guard there on post and they'll be able to have the guard roll the stone away. But they're recognizing that this is going to be a problem that is before them. But upon arriving, they discover that the problem that they were thinking of has already been resolved. Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? We think of something and we obsess about it or we dwell about it because it's going to be the biggest problem that we face, and it ends up being nothing at all because other things await us. Well, it turns out that they worried about something that was the least of their concerns. For what awaited them was far greater. So the women arrive and they entered the tomb, and immediately they see to the right side that there is a young man dressed in white, as Mark describes him. Luke's gospel says that this young man dressed in white is an angel. And he's sitting there, and they were expecting to see Jesus' body. They were not expecting to see a young man dressed in white. And so they're alarmed. They're shocked at seeing this. And the young man says to them, do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene. He is not here. He has risen. So a couple things happen. One, they're alarmed. Two, this young man in white tells them they're alarmed. That would make me even more alarmed. I'm like, okay, obviously I look scared, but you're telling me even more so that I am scared. And in the midst of that, they're trying to digest these different things that they have just seen and heard. They're expecting Jesus' body, it's not there. There's a young man there, and the young man tells them what they are thinking and what they are feeling and what it was that they were there to do. So with that, he's also told them that Jesus is not there because Jesus has risen. So I have to think that in their minds, they're starting to process, if these first things are true, perhaps Jesus has risen because he is not here. Well, have you ever been speechless? Something so shocking or crazy happened that you have no words, that you have nothing to say. I'm sure you can think of times that you wish your spouse or friend had been speechless because they couldn't stop talking. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're thinking about times where you were so stunned that you couldn't say anything. You were overwhelmed. Well, that's what we find here today, because there is no record of anything that the women say in response to what is happening here. They remain silent. So in this daze they find themselves in, the next words that they hear from the young man in white are to go and tell the disciples and Peter. Go and tell the disciples and Peter. Well, I can tell you, friends, that the fact that Peter is mentioned, because for those of you keeping score at home, Peter actually is one of the disciples, and his name is mentioned here. Peter's name is mentioned along with the disciples as I think an opportunity for us to recognize the forgiveness and love that is extended. Because Peter, not too much earlier, has failed Jesus. They were gathered around the table, they were sharing a meal, and Jesus was telling the disciples there that one of them was going to betray him, who's speaking about Judas. And the conversation continues, and Peter says, well, I will never fail you. I will never fail you. And Jesus says to him, you're going to deny even knowing me three times before the rooster crows. And Peter denied knowing Jesus three times and had failed him. And so the fact that his name is mentioned here feels like a gesture of love and peace and encouragement, something that I think each of us can love to receive in hearing that. Well, have you ever failed somebody? I started to think about it, and I could think of one time that I can think of many times, but I decided I would share one time that I failed somebody. And this was a few years back. I had gone on a mission trip to the other side of the world and returned home, and so I'd been gone for about 12 days, and so I came home and said to Jen, "What can I do to make your day easier?" And she said, "Just one thing. I want you to pick up the kids from school." And I'm thinking, one thing? That's it? I'm like, my love language, if you've ever read Gary Chapman's 5 love languages, is acts of service. I'm like, I'm here to serve. Our grass needs to be cut because it's been growing for 2 weeks, and so it's about yay high. You know, there's dishes in the sink. There are things that need to be done and taken care of, and all you want me to do is to pick up the kids from school. So I'm like, I got this. So I decided I was going to be the overachiever that I sometimes fall into that category of wanting to be, and so I started running errands. I cut the grass, and after doing all those things, I was a little bit tired because my body felt like I was still on the other side of the world. So I decided that I was going to take a little nap. Well, I took the nap, I set an alarm on my phone, and I have never slept through an alarm before. However, that day, I woke up groggy, and my phone was going off, and I thought, why is my phone going off? Where am I? And I realized that I was late to picking up the kids from school. So I hopped in the car, raced over to the school, I walk into the office, and my kids are sitting there, and I walk in, and that walk of shame, like, yes, I'm the dad that forgot my kids. And I'm also thinking, is there any way if I take them to buy ice cream that they won't tell their mom? I look over and there's tears running down their face. I'm like, nope, it's not an option. That's not gonna work. And Riley said to me, "Daddy, you forgot us." And I'm like, great, I failed her too. So there's two failures in one story. There's probably many more if I kept talking about it. But I kept thinking, oh, if I could only have a redo, the one thing Jen asked me to do. I mean, I guess technically I did pick them up from school. She didn't say to pick them up on time. It's kind of, come to think of it, this is your fault. Jeez, gotta be more specific next time, please. So Jesus longs to provide us with second chances. He does for Peter and he does for you and me. He extends kindness and love and grace. And we can all use some of that kindness, can't we? He gives opportunities for hope and for healing and for forgiveness, so be encouraged. So the women hear the news to go and tell the disciples and Peter that Jesus is going ahead of them into Galilee and that he will see them there just as he told them. But verse 8 tells us, trembling and bewildered, they fled the tomb and said nothing to anyone. But friends, that's not the end of the story. Jesus appears next to Mary Magdalene. She was one of the women who was at the tomb, who had bought spices and brought them to anoint Jesus' body, and he appears to her. Maybe he thinks she is someone who has heard the first part of the story firsthand, so he appears to her, and she goes and she tells the disciples who are mourning and weeping. And understandably so, they are mourning and weeping because their friend, their teacher who they loved, who they saw killed in front of them, they're missing him deeply. They're experiencing loss. But she goes and she tells them that he has risen, and they don't believe it. They don't believe it. It just sounds to them like that could not possibly happen. Well, oftentimes, if you're not ready to ask the question, you're not ready for the answer. If you're not ready to ask the question, you're not ready for the answer. However, if you're saying, what happened? What did I miss? You want to know. You want to hear the rest of the story. But the disciples left after Jesus had been crucified. They thought that was the end of the story. They didn't know that there was more to come. Have you ever told somebody a story that they didn't believe? I mean, it can be so frustrating. You're like, I promise it's true. And the harder you try to tell them that it's true and convey that, they think that you're exaggerating and that you're making something up. Well, Jen and I were directors of youth ministry in Orlando for 7 years before we became pastors. And to become pastors, we went to seminary at Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, California. And our second year there, Jen was pregnant with Riley, and some students who were had been in high school when we were there and were now in college reached out and said, we're coming to Southern California, we're visiting some relatives, we'd love to come see you. And we thought, that'd be great, that'd be really fun. And so they came to visit us, and a couple days before they called and said, we can get tickets to go see The Price is Right. Do you want to go with us? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Absolutely, I love The Price is Right. I mean, when I had chicken pox, that kept me going through. I survived. And so they came over and they were visiting with us, and they brought t-shirts. They had made t-shirts for themselves, but they made a t-shirt for me that said, about to have my second girl. And then you turn around on the back and it said, hope to give the wheel a whirl. And I thought, if I don't get picked to go up on the stage, something is wrong, right? So we drove over, and I said we drove over. We could have walked there faster because the traffic was so bad, but we got there and we waited in line. And before you go into The Price is Right, they actually screen every single person that's going in. And they ask you a couple questions, and they're observing you and watching you, because the last thing they want is deer in headlights look. You know, if you get called and you're just, you can't even move. They don't want that. They want the person that's animated and crazy. And so every single person in our group, two of them were introverts. I didn't know who they were in their interviews. I'm like, what in the world was that? They were so crazy and excited and animated. And so we went in and we got seated in the back row. And I'm like, are you serious? I love The Price is Right. Nothing bad to all of you in the back row. I know you chose that. But I'm going to The Price is Right. I want to sit up close. And so the show starts, and we're just having a great time. We're like, I can't believe that we're really here. And after each person gets called up, we're like, do you think there's a chance we'll get called? I mean, it was like we were pulling the string. We kept saying it over and over. Any chance that we get called? Any chance our names get called? And we thought that one of the people had done a great job on their interview, and we were sure that she was going to get called up onto the stage. Well, we went through half of the show, and the second half of the show is going to start. And they say, Matthew Henderson, come on down. And we're like, what just happened? That was one of our friends. And so he goes running down, and we're like, oh my goodness, just like on TV when you see people doing that, and you're like, they're crazy. Why are they jumping up and down? Because when it actually happens, it's pretty amazing, I'll tell you that. So he goes running down, and we're like, wow, he's on the show. And then we're immediately thinking, okay, we've got to help him, because it's one thing to get on the show, but you got to win something, because you don't want to just be one of the sad losers that sits down in the front. They pan across at the very end of the show and they wave at the camera. They're like, yeah, I don't know how much anything costs. And so he's down in the front, and they pull up a couple beach cruisers onto the stage, and they're describing what the beach cruisers are. And when you're actually in the studio, you can't hear a word that they're saying. You know, on TV, they're like, these two beach cruisers are Schwinn bikes that belong. You know, they're giving you all the details. You can't hear a thing. So we just see what's up there, and we're like, 1,200. And so he turns back at us, and he has no idea, because when you get called up there, your body's shaking. You don't know where you are. And so he gets up there, and he bids $1,200. And it was like $1,250. So he wins and goes up onto the stage, and we're like, no way, this is amazing. More jumping. I'd invite you to stand up and jump with me, but we don't want to have any injuries. And so then he goes up there, and they're like, you could win this brand new desk or a new car. And we're like, no way, this is really happening. And so we give him the numbers, and you know, it was, if you fill in the numbers for the car before you fill in the numbers for the desk, then you win the car. We nailed every single one, and he won the car. And we're like, what? This is crazy. No one's going to believe us. And that's the point of the story. Don't worry, I'll eventually get there. And so he gets to go up and spin the wheel to see if he can get into the Showcase Showdown. He spins the wheel, and he gets into the Showcase Showdown. And at this point, we're like, wait a second, we might get to meet Bob Barker. This would be even more amazing than you're winning a car. And so we're kind of on standby. The three of us are waiting, and if he wins, we'll get to go up there. And he had a shirt on that said, quit my job to go meet Bob. And so clearly he had the better shirt. That worked. But he did not win the Showcase Showdown. And that's not what this is about. How amazing it would have been if he had won the Jeep and the trip to Hawaii and those other things. But afterwards, we're out in the parking lot, and of course, everyone's walking by going, congratulations, congratulations. She was there, and he calls his parents on the phone. This is what the story is really about. It just took me 30 minutes to get there. Calls his parents on the phone, and he's like, Mom, we just went to the Price is Right, and I won a new car. And she's like, ha, yeah, I'm not going to fall for that. I don't believe you. He's like, what? Put Dad on the phone. Puts Dad on the phone. Dad doesn't believe him. He passes off to his sister, who's more honorable and trustworthy, and she's like, I promise, Matt won a car. And they're like, we don't believe it. Put Jeff on the phone. I mean, I was their high school and middle school youth leader. So they put me on the phone, and the dad says, Jeff, you're a man of God. Do not lie to me. And I'm like, I'm not lying. Matt won a car. It was pretty amazing. But it was so frustrating when they didn't believe it. They didn't believe it. So for Mary Magdalene, how frustrating that is, that she has seen the risen Lord. She's the first to see the risen Lord, and she goes to tell them, and they don't believe it. And then to the two men, and they go to tell the disciples. So this is the second time they're hearing this message, and they don't believe it. So Jesus has to take matters into his own hands, and we find in verse 14 that he goes to the 11, and he says this. He says this to the 11. As they were eating, he rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. You know, sometimes we simply can't believe it because we can't see it. We simply can't believe it because we can't see it. I have looked for sunglasses that were on my head because I could not see them. I have looked for keys that were in my hand, walking around going, have you seen my keys? And eventually, you see them. But we have walked right by hidden treasures that are right in front of us. But we're not ready to see because our eyes aren't open to that. Well, did anybody take advantage of time at home during that thing called quarantine to clean out a room or to fix the clutter in an area? I'm hoping lots of people did. I know that was something we did in our house. But at the office just down the street, I had the opportunity to help clean out the conference room. And the conference room was filled with lots of books that were in there, and some of them were really old books that we thought, if we wouldn't want to just give this to somebody, we should probably get rid of it. And so we were going through and cleaning out books, and there was one book that looked different. There was one book that smelled different. And the person I was with kind of handed it to me, and I opened it, I looked at it, I'm like, ugh, this doesn't look very good, because you could smell it. And I opened up the front cover, and it said, Edith May Dawson, August 1st, 1891. And I thought, 1891? And I grabbed my phone out and did some math on my phone. I'm like, 131 years ago. I'm like, 130 years ago. I'm like, that is crazy. It was a Bible. So I turned the next page in the Bible, and in it was written the name of her husband and children and grandchildren. Sometimes there's a page in the Bible where you can mark those things down. And I looked, and I saw that she was married to Walter Jones. Well, Walter Jones Park is right there. And I'm thinking, wow, we were about to throw this out. And here is a Bible that belonged to Walter Jones' wife. And so we called the Mandarin Museum that's right here. And when I say we, I mean Carla Mayo in the front office. She called the museum and said, we have this Bible that belongs to Walter Jones' wife. And A woman came down who was a great grandchild of Walter Jones and Edith May Dawson and took the Bible, and now it's across the street in the museum. But it was one of those moments where we almost missed it. There was a treasure that was right there, and we almost missed it because our eyes couldn't see. Our eyes saw one thing, and yet what was at the very heart of it and the core of it was something completely different. Well, we have so much to discover in our journey of faith with Christ. And I say journey because it's not a destination. It's the journey, and it's traveling along the way that is so rewarding and what it's so about. And in our journey of faith, we don't go at this alone. If you've ever been out on a hike or a walk with somebody, when you're with somebody else, there's things that you can notice, things that you can point out to one another that if you're just by yourself, you may completely miss. At MPC, we want to be a church that is there for one another because this is not a solo venture. But we are here to be present and to walk with each other in the midst of the joys and in the midst of the sorrows of our lives. And in doing so, the good news is that we don't have to be perfect or have it all figured out to start this journey. We just have to show up, and then we can get started. You know, on the journey, we need to move from knowing things about Jesus to knowing Jesus. But the journey is so important because not everything is going to be pleasant. We're going to encounter experiences of death, addiction, illness, depression, loneliness, or anxiety, and Jesus wants to be there with us each step of the way. And sometimes the way that Jesus is there is by providing somebody to walk with you, to encourage you, to love you in the midst of those hard times. And the evidence of that is just in how Jesus lived. We've seen it in some of the recent sermons about Christ and his encounters with others, that Jesus loved other people so well. He fed the hungry. He healed the sick. He calmed the storm. He brought sight to the blind. He helped the paralyzed to walk. He listens. He hears us. And he wept at the loss of a friend. And the disciples who had witnessed all of these things still found it impossible for them to believe that Jesus had risen until Jesus showed up himself and was present with them. And then they were able to believe it. And when he shows up and he talks about how stubborn they were, he interrupts their dinner party. And he says something to the effect of, "Really, guys? How many times do I have to tell you?" Because in Mark's gospel, there are already three accounts of times that Jesus had shared with them that he was going to die and that he was going to be raised to new life. Three times, Mark 8, Mark 9, Mark 10. And yet, even in the midst of them knowing what was coming, the truth of what was happening was impossible for them to believe. But the story doesn't end here. Jesus then, after sharing with them, "Come on, you've listened to me before," gives them a command. And he commands them to go into the world and tell all of creation about the gospel. And so that's the charge to them. But I want to suggest to you that that's also the charge to us. It's our opportunity to go and tell others of the great news that we have heard. MPC partners with missionaries around the world. We have people in Brazil and in Cambodia and Turkey and in Liberia and in Congo and in Costa Rica and other places that are sharing the love of Christ in those communities. This summer, 42 high school youth are going to go on a trip to Costa Rica. They're going to spend time in Alajuelita, Costa Rica, and they're going to share the love of Christ with people there. This is a ministry we've partnered with for the last 14 years, and we're continuing that relationship. 25 students are going to be going to Tennessee, and they're going to go to a mission camp where they're going to be doing service and mission projects in the community, seeking to point people to the light of Christ in their eyes. But you don't have to go somewhere to be able to shine the light of Christ. Every single week, we have people from right here at Mandarin Presbyterian Church that go down to City Rescue Mission downtown, and they're a part of a Bible study that comes alongside and builds relationships and loves and cares for people. We have people that work in the thrift shop. We have people that are helping some folks who don't know how to read at City Rescue learn how to read. On Tuesdays, we have the Daily Bread Food Pantry that our church has, where those people are serving people in need who are hungry and in need of food right here. From Monday to Friday, Meals on Wheels is a group that MPC has a lot of volunteers that are delivering meals to people during the week for people that are not able to get out. Young Lives is another ministry that many people from our church are a part of that reaches out to teen moms and shares the love of Christ with them, and for the club hour that they have, allows them to just be teens and to be able to hear the good news of God in their lives. Friends, there are so many ways for us to serve, and you don't have to go to Africa to share the love of Christ, but you can go to Africa. In 2012, we took a mission trip with 6-8 Ministries to Costa Rica, and there was a student at Mandarin High School. His name was Thomas Wood, and he wasn't a member of the church, but he attended our youth group here, and he went and served in Costa Rica, and a seed was planted. And over the years, that was watered, and it grew. And 3 weeks ago, he came into my office and shared, you know, I don't go to your church. I'm a member at another church, but MPC was a group that I went to Costa Rica with. And now I feel God calling me to go to Tanzania, and there's a ministry group that he's going to be with that's sending him there. And he was sharing about that, asking if I would be able to pray for him, asking if the church would be able to support him, which we're going to do. And as he continues to raise funds, I couldn't help but think, what a picture that is of God working and moving. And friends, you don't have to go to Africa. Wherever your 2 feet are, there are opportunities to share the good news of Jesus Christ. But you may be thinking to yourself, but what do I say? I don't know what to say. And I've got great news for you. I love this quote. It's attributed to Francis of Assisi, but who knows really. But it says, preach the gospel at all times and use words when necessary. Preach the gospel at all times and use words when necessary. I mean, think about it. Let your life speak. Let who you are and how you live speak. Let that be your word that other people see, and they will know that something is different, that there is something about your life. Well, Mary Magdalene and the two on the road, they shared the story of their encounter with Jesus. And we get to share our story of our encounter with Jesus. I know some of us think that our stories are boring because there wasn't anything hard or challenging that happened. But I promise you, as you share your story with someone else, there will be things that will resonate for them, that will open up their eyes to that diversity of gifts and that diversity of people and how God loves us in such powerful ways. Let us remember this story that we read today like it was just yesterday. What happened? What did I miss? Let us be ready with an answer when people ask that. I don't get Easter. What happened? What's that all about? You can share with them the good news of this day. Let us be the ones that go and tell others of the impact of Christ in our lives, so that we might not just keep that good news for ourselves, but that we might share that with others. Death could not hold him. He is not here. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Let's pray together. Oh God, thank you for this day and for the love that you have for us. God, I thank you for each person that's here and those who are worshiping with us online. And I just ask, God, that you would wrap us up in your arms and help us to feel your love and your embrace in our lives. Thank you for the good news. Thank you for Mary Magdalene hearing that and the two on the road hearing that, and for their continuing to share about what you had done and that you have risen from the grave. God, help us to be people that seek to share with others the light of Christ and allow it to shine in who we are each and every day. Thank you for this day. Thank you for Easter. We lift up all these things and pray them in your Son, Jesus' name. Amen. I invite you to stand as we sing together.